All right, everyone. We'll call today's meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Economies Committee to order for today. I want to start out with some sad news first. Senator Dames is not able to be with us today. His mother passed away, and so he's at the funeral today. So I'd ask that, along with Senator Kubley's family, Pat, and we keep Senator Dames and his family in our thoughts and prayers. So Gary's not going to be, neither Gary will be with us today. I also, of course, the senators know it's they're listening closely to that intense debate on manure in the House or the Senate floor. I did announce it's Agricultural Day, National Agriculture Day here in the United States. I also have been asked to announce from the University of Minnesota has asked me to announce the 2012 Siegel Prize for Excellence in Agriculture Award laureate winners to announce today. For production agriculture, it's Bruce Hamness, a family farmer from Stephen, Minnesota. For agribusiness, it's our friend and colleague, former Agriculture Commissioner Gene Hugeson. For agriculture business, Minnesota's Agriculture Commissioner for 15 years and three different administrations. And then for knowledge, Philip Pardee, U of M Professor of Applied Economics. So those are the SEAL award winners, and our congratulations goes out to those three folks today.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just make a comment, that little tour that we had on the farm, that 1,200 sow unit.
Yes, ma'am.
That was on the Hugeson farm. Yeah, it was. It was where we're supposed to shower together. That's where it happened.
Oh, all right.
Chair,
Senator Saxon.
Is that what Senator Rosen was giggling about on the floor?
Well, Senator Sagsug, I don't know if it was an oversight or just caught up in the moment here, whatever. But you know, she didn't mention my name in joining the tour, and I felt kind of left out. But that's anyway. Today we were going to do the agriculture policy bill. That will not be done today. We're going to wait with that until Tuesday. We're working on some other issues and hope to have those done on Tuesday. We'll hear the food and feed bill. I'm working with the minority members and working with the department and staff, and we need to discuss that a little bit more, and we'll talk about that. So our intent will be that we pass the bill out on Tuesday. We send it to Judiciary Committee and get that on the road. So today, since we're the Agriculture Committee and we really don't have any rules per se, we do what makes sense for the good of the state in agriculture. And so today we have a bill up on dealing with biodiesel and one of the biofuels bills, Senate File 1635. I am the author of the bill. Senator Dames is not here as vice chair, so unless anyone objects, I will present the bill from the chair's position here. And again, my intent is not to pass the bill today, but to hold it over and maybe for possible inclusion for next week's omnibus policy bill. So with that thought in mind, if we were going to pass a standalone bill, I would probably follow tradition and present from the testifier's table. But I know we'll have a lot of folks interested in this and want to testify. So we'll start out with that. And members, if you look in your packets, you have materials out here. You've got the current status of biodiesel in railroads. And technical, oh, you don't have that one? Sorry, lapse in the staff here. If Senator Dames was here, he knows the vice chair's role. It's when the chairman goofs up, and make sure the chairman doesn't goof up, and when he does, you take the blame for it. You have a pamphlet, Biodiesel Myths, busted. A lot of comments that'll help you with the discussion today in case people provide any myths to us. Another one called that I copied off of the USDA's long-term projections just a couple weeks ago. Talks about the demand for biofuels stocks, and it talks about what's going on in many other countries of the world. I would point out, for example, the EU is a large consumer of biofuels, and a lot of their engines, car engines and so on, are run on diesel fuel and have been a large consumer of biofuels, and especially biodiesel in the country there. I've been to Brazil and Argentina many times, working with the biodiesel industry there. In Argentina, for example, has a 10%, a B10 mandate now in the country, and is moving to B20 later this year or early next year. On the second page of that, I would point out again from the long-term projections, the USDA, the crude oil price per barrel, showing what it was in 2010, $75.90. Their projections show going out to 2021 that the price for the year would average $24.60 a barrel. So there, and the next page, of that graph didn't turn out so well, but basically it says that they expect crude oil prices to remain historically high over the next decade. We also, and I know the railroads are here in the audience, that's where we're looking at some of this stuff from railroads. We also have a position statement from General Electric on the General Electric locomotives, and that discussion you can look at. Again, note the standards for biodiesel fuel, that the biodiesel to work has to meet those standards. Another document that says biodiesel production is expanding, that's one of the questions that could be asked. This is nationwide. Biodiesel production is expanding. A question or two may come up on biodiesel emissions, diesel fuel emissions and biodiesel. This document from the National Biodiesel Board gives you a comparison of the emissions of various levels of biodiesel. B100 is a straight 100% biodiesel. B20 is a 20% blend of B100 and the remaining diesel fuel, and it shows you the emissions from various levels, and it describes the emissions on the back. Another document that I thought would be helpful in our discussions is from the National Biodiesel Board, again, talking about biodiesel standards. And it's very important that you understand this, that the biodiesel standards are set up for reasons. And then it talks about the engine warranties, and we have more information on that if folks would like it. So I would like to present the the lead all amendment, the A2 amendment, and we'll pass that around. A little bit of discussion is currently we have in law a cold weather provision, and folks are in the audience here to testify on that. We are planning to extend that cold water provisions. We've had extensive discussions with the biodiesel industry, with the Department of Agriculture, with the Department of Commerce, who has jurisdiction over these things, and the governor's office, I might add. That's in the first part of it. The second part of it is to have a discussion on the exemptions that currently exist. So, with that, I'd like to call up to the witness stand first. I guess I will place this delete all amendment in front of us again. My motion will be at the end of the day to lay over Senate File 1635 for possible inclusion as amended. And again, we'll speak from the delete all amendment. So, Senator Saxog.
Mr. Chair, would you entertain any amendments to your amendment? Would you want to do that now or after?
Let's wait a little bit and hear some of the testimony and see what the senators would like to do then. First up, I'd like to ask former Representative Jerry Schoenfeld to come up and talk to us a little bit of a description on biodiesel. Welcome, Mr. Schoenfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jerry Schoenfeld. I've worked with the Minnesota Biodiesel Council in the last couple of years. They are the producers of biodiesel in Minnesota and elsewhere. I've also, since the beginning of this whole discussion about biodiesel going back to 2000, worked with the Minnesota soybean growers in bringing most of the legislation forward. I think that in helping with this a little bit, one of the things I might tell you is some of the progress that kind of has been made over the years. There aren't too many legislators that are still here. Senator Stumpf is one that was here when this bill first went through the legislature. The original bill started out at a 2% biodiesel mandate and later was expanded to 5% and beyond. But when the original bill went through, there were a lot of questions, and a lot of these same questions still seem to continue throughout the years, even after many thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of miles of usage. However, I can tell you some of the objectives that we had, particularly from the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, at the beginning of the intent to have Minnesota become a leader in the usage of biodiesel. One of the first objectives was to try and do something to improve the price of commodities for Minnesota farmers. And certainly representing soybean growers, you all understand that. I would say that in terms of meeting that objective, it has met that objective far beyond anything that we would have ever imagined, in the fact that at the time that the original bill was proposed, the price of soybean oil was at about 11 cents. Today it's about 50 cents. That increase, to make some relevance to you, means that in a 60-pound bushel of soybeans, there are 11 pounds of oil and 49 pounds of meal. The oil was traditionally had always been kind of a hindrance to the overall soybean complex because of the fact that there was a lot of excess oil around the world. And so soybeans are used primarily for the production of soybean meal. Soybean meal is a product that ranges between 44 and 48% protein and is one of the best protein sources around the world. And it is primarily used for that. Oil, which is a minor co-product, traditionally didn't have a very high price. Through the use of this biodiesel, it has dramatically increased the price. And I guess you could talk to economists and they can give you different reasons and different ideas on it as to how much. But I think cowboy math would tell most of you at 11 pounds to go from 11 cents to 50 over 50 cents is considerable increase in terms of the value to that soybean product. It is a little different, since I've mentioned this, I tell you it's a little different than some other situations in that it is not the primary food source, so it is not so much a food versus fuel kind of an issue, because the primary food in soybeans is for the protein, which is the meal. Secondly, one of the other purposes, and it still continues today, we all watch, for instance, discussions about Iran shutting down the Straits of Hormuz or discussions about the use of different oil products around the world, whether it's from Canada or Mexico or a lot of other places. One of the purposes was to try and help achieve energy independence in this country. Now, certainly, biodiesel by itself has not done that by itself, but the combination of ethanol and the combination of biodiesel has made a significant impact. And one of the things that many of you may not know, although we are still importing considerable amounts of crude oil from around the world, in this part of the country, mostly from Canada, there is actually, this past year was the first year since 1959 in which we are net exporters of refined fuel, this country. And that had not been the case since 1959, I believe I'm right in saying. So that we have become a net exporter of refined fuel. So in part, we're helping to meet that energy independence area. Thirdly, the intent of Minnesota's legislation, with their first state in the country to put in a state mandate, was to try to help light matches such across the country in the establishment of an alternative fuel in the diesel area. I could point out what that has done. Minnesota was the first. Since that time, and I have them with me, a list of all of the different state mandates and so forth, and I can tell you that today, across this country, and here's the list, there are 31 states that have state biodiesel incentives in the form of tax credits or exemptions. There are 11 states that have production incentives. There are 22 states that have grants and loans for this purpose. And there are 10 states that have mandates that range from bioheat mandates, particularly in the east, to biodiesel mandates such as Minnesota's, that range, for instance, on the west coast with regard to Washington State and some others. So in terms of lighting a match, it also was successful. In addition to that, there is a national renewable fuel standard that was established by Congress that today requires 1 billion gallons of biodiesel usage nationwide. Fourth, our intention was to create a seamless, fungible fuel system that is interchangeable with regular diesel fuel. And in fact, with biodiesel, that is the case. It does not take retrofitting of engines for that purpose, and it does fit into the regular fuel supply system. As part of that, the diesel fuel ASTM standard is D975. It's a list of standards required which have many minimums in terms of certain specifications relative to diesel fuel. And I can tell you that at 5% or less, in terms of blended biodiesel, it meets the exact same standards as regular diesel fuel, number two diesel fuel. A fifth was to add jobs and economic development in throughout our country. According to the National Biodiesel Board, the development of biodiesel in the United States, started by Minnesota's mandate, has developed 39,000 jobs nationwide. It's added $3.8 billion to the gross domestic product. And the last objective was to try and do things to improve our environmental situation. Biodiesel does show reductions and significant reductions in almost all greenhouse gases except for NOx. In the case of NOx, it's about a break even. Recently, the states of Texas and California, both of which are not known for their support of renewable fuels, have both approved biodiesel's usage and have made determinations that it has no negative impact in the area of NOx. And it is also, for instance, in particular, it's one of the things you do find is that throughout the United States there are a lot of areas in metropolitan areas that have switched bus systems over to as high as B20. And the reason for it is that it provides as much as a 30% reduction in the particulate matter in buses when used at a B20 level. So it has environmental activities that are positive as well. Along with having said all the positive about biodiesel, I will also tell you that as Minnesota entered the mandate, there were some hiccups along the way, some things that didn't work in all cases, and they have been addressed in many respects, and we are still continuing to do that. But one of the things that I would talk to you, because of Minnesota's cold weather, one of the things that probably is most prominent in the discussion is that of cold flow problems. I would guess that most of you have not heard much about cold flow problems in the last couple of years. Now, this year you could dismiss that because of the fact that we haven't had a lot of cold weather. However, we have had enough cold weather that those issues have not arisen, to my knowledge at least, in Minnesota this year. And there are some reasons why I think that we have such an improved situation with this. First of all, the Department of Commerce, and working with others, instituted cold flow filter testing a few years ago that was able to better test it wasn't just about the cloud point, but to be able to better test for the cold flow ability of the product. A new certification system for production plants was established. It's called BQ9000, to assure proper production protocols. When the plants first started, in the first year or two, there was some product that was made that did not meet the specifications that were required. But since that time, under the BQ9000, these protocols have been added to the production plants, and today I think we're producing a very quality product, much better than had originally started, and it meets the objectives for the biodiesel. Thirdly, when biodiesel first started, there was no such thing as a blending facility for biodiesel. As an example, biodiesel is a situation that can be blended with regular diesel fuel simply by dumping it in. And initially, that's the way a lot of the biodiesel was blended. But today in Minnesota, all of our terminals now have the type of blending equipment that uses injector blending, and that has really resulted in diminishing many, if not all, of the problems that we saw. Even during the time a few years ago in which there was some problems with cold flow ability, the Marathon Oil, as an example, had instituted measures that they claimed that they never had a single problem, and it was because of the way they were improving the blending, and most of that has been taken care of. Now, there's one part of the state, southwestern Minnesota, which still has got a ways to go. It is presently served primarily out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and presently there is an approval by which the Minnesota soybean growers provided funds to people in South Dakota to help address and put in a system that will provide terminal blending in that area as well. The next thing is that an ASTM standard was developed. And if you take a look at the existing law, there are four requirements before it can move forward to other percentages. And one of those was development of an American Society for Testing and Material Standard. There were two standards that were developed, actually three. One was for B100. It's called ASTM D6751 to ensure the quality of the fuel. That was established about 3 years ago. And the other is for D975. And as I said before, under 5%, it meets the same standards as regular diesel fuel. And then there's an additional blending standard between 6% and 20% that also exists. So those standards ensure the quality. And those standards weren't there some years ago. Biodiesel blends, as I said, up to 5% do meet the D975, the same as regular diesel fuel. The last thing, however, was that we also found that there were changes that took place at the time that the biodiesel mandate in Minnesota was put into place. There was another change that took place at the same time that ended up in resulting in problems, and that was that the federal government required a shift to ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel at the very time that we put into the Minnesota requirement for biodiesel. Ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel reacted differently with the biodiesel than what we had seen previously. We had had about 20 years of testing and thought that we knew everything about it, but we found out that ULSD acted a bit differently. As part of that, there's also a push towards lower aromatic fuels. And the use of number one diesel fuel is a low aromatic fuel. And we have got some recognition that in a low aromatic fuel like number one, which is different than number two, that there is some difference of reaction and that there is some precipitation that sometimes takes place. The only way I can explain it to you and this isn't exactly a chemical science, but it has been explained to me this way. Consider that you have a baseball that's covered with Velcro. And now you have another baseball that is covered with Velcro, but only half as much Velcro. And now you throw another Velcroed ball at the first one, which would be like number two diesel, and they'll stick together no matter where you throw it. But in the case of number one diesel, it has a little less stickies on it than the number two, and so it doesn't join quite as the same way. So because of that, one of the things that was in this bill that's being brought forth was an extension of basically an order that had come out of the state, which we had requested a couple of years ago, to exempt number one diesel fuel from the system until all of these things could be solved. The existing state law also requires that the state work with the Cold Flow Task Force under the Minnesota Biodiesel Task Force to resolve that problem. They are working on it. As recently as last Monday, they had a meeting, and they determined at that point that they had not yet found the solution. And so we had supported the idea of extending the number one diesel fuel exemption for that purpose. There are people with differences of opinion on that, but at least that was the reason we had done it. So, Mr. Chairman, that is what I can tell you about how some of the problems over the years have been addressed. The last thing I would say is this. Representing those folks who have the major interest in biodiesel, we have tried to take a proactive approach in dealing with issues that have arrived over the time. And when you consider that this thing went into effect basically in 2005, and that 7 years later we've made the kinds of really massive advances in the use of this fuel nationwide, quite frankly, in 7 years, I think we've done a pretty good job. Part of that is because we've tried to address different issues along the way. And so it would have been easy just to say, well, you got to do this or you got to do that. But we've tried to address those issues. And I know I've talked with many of you over the years. Senator Squire, I hope that, for instance, that some of the issues that we've talked about over the years, that you feel some of it has been addressed. And we've been trying to do that. And I've explained here how we've tried to address those things. And I guess with that, I'll just stop.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Schoenfeld? We're running short on time, folks. Again, we started over an hour late, so and we got an Environment Committee coming in here, and so they're going to be chomping into bit. But when we started late, that's the problem we have. So other testifiers would like to come forward on the bill. And again, we'll be talking about the delete all amendment. And does Mr. Pagel, do you have the delete all amendment?
Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you. Mr. Pagel, welcome to the committee.
Chair and Senate members, my name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. I represent what was Six Taconite Mines is now expanding into another mine with Esser, Magnetation, who you heard some language today on the floor, as well as Mesabi Nugget. Some background information on the iron mining industry. We make up 34% of the gross regional product of northeastern Minnesota and northwestern Wisconsin. Like agriculture in other parts of the state, our mineral extractions are a little bit different than yours, but it's still one of those type of industries that is a major part of the state. And I'm here to speak today on the amendment to the DE amendment that we just saw. We appreciate the fact that the chair is looking at least 2 years of it, extending the exemption. We have been working on a longer exemption, and I would like to tell you a little bit about that, if I may. Like you, I know you want energy independence. We would want that, too. We also want the United States steel industry, of which 75% of the steel made the United States comes out of northeastern Minnesota. There's really only two states in the United States where this ore comes from. So us being able to produce iron ore is very important as well. And the reason we have the exemptions at this time is the production trucks that run 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, to be quite honest, have had problems using 5% biodiesel. We're exempt at this point. However, we did have a load of biodiesel with 5% delivered, and we had some major problems. But one of the other things, as you know, and we appreciate that you've been working on permitting bills and streamlining, is that the mines have been expanding to the point that they're actually going to have to run the trucks that they're buying now more than 2 years longer than what they have in the past. The trucks they're buying now will have to run over 8 years with a couple of major overhauls in between. These vehicles are $3 million apiece, and they run, as I say, 24 hours a day. My point is that the problems that we've had with some biodiesel, we would like the exemption to continue. We appreciate the study language that's in the DE amendment. But I guess the one thing I would like to point out is while there are warranties for these vehicles, every one of the warranties, whether it's Komatsu or whether it's CAT, have pointed out that they will not honor the warranties if there's a problem with fuel. So we're taking quite a risk. I guess the other thing I'd like to mention is the air permits that we have are based as well on these vehicles that are being run. They have to run very efficiently. They're very fine-tuned. And we'd hope that you'd understand that, well, this is also the Ag Department. It's also rural development. And this is one of the things that we would hope that we could extend that exemption a little bit longer. And I think one of the problems we have is was brought up the last person that testified was that there's new protocols required for the blending of the fuel. I did check with CLMT, which is the old Murphy Oil up in Superior, where most of northeastern Minnesota's fuel comes from. They still do a cold blend. I also heard that there was one other entity on the range that has a permit to do blending, and they are also doing a cold blend. So there's kind of a combination of problems, and we appreciate continuing to work on this. And thank you for your giving us this time.
Thank you, Mr. Pagel. Any questions of Mr. Pagel?
Well,
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Pagel, are you supporting the delete all amendment?
I would make a couple of comments on the delete all amendment. I think it actually goes fewer years. It's only a 2 years exemption where the original bill had three. I would like to see that be longer. What we'd worked out in the House, though, I know this is the upper body, was 8 years. And that was based on the fact that these trucks have to run for that period of time. The other thing I guess I would look at on the study is it has the Department of Ag looking at this. I would add the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development and the Commissioner of the Iron Range Resources, who has been given responsibilities to working with the mines on these kinds of issues.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr.
Senator Skoy,
I'd just like you to know that I didn't get what I wanted on this either. I would have taken your exemption away.
I know that, sir.
I want this to work for everybody in Minnesota.
Chair, Senator, I understand that. And I think what's, in, not to contradict you, sir, but I have to stand up and say, we want to continue working as well. And if we have problems to where the trucks aren't running, it would be just like at harvest time, when the combine wasn't running or your auger wasn't running. We need to have them running.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you. And this will be my last comment. You know, we run a fair amount of diesel fuel, too.
Yes.
And we did have some trouble at the get-go.
Senator Skoy, would you speak into the microphone?
And we did have some trouble from the get-go. And you know, we probably blamed it on the biodiesel. But in the scheme of things, it wasn't the biodiesel. It was the ultra-low sulfur fuel that was causing our problem. And it was because there was getting moisture in there, and the moisture was falling out. And once we figured out that every third transport or so we had to treat it, we have not had any trouble. The blackness has gone out of our fuel filters that we were struggling with. And, you know, but to just make these exemptions is kind of death by small pricks, I think. And so I think if you can get the number one commissioner's exemption in the wintertime, people should be that really has taken care of the problem. I think you heard from the testimony that there just hasn't been a lot of issues these last couple winters. So I'm hoping we can make this work for everybody. And thank you, Ms. Chair. That's just a comment, not a question.
Thank you. Further question. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Pagel, and thank you for your willingness to work together with me and others on this. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Sweeney. I'm with BNSF Railway Company in St. Paul. Like Mr. Pagel, we appreciate the extension of the exemption. However, we also share his wish that it was a longer exemption. As background, the railroad industry, as you know, consumes an awful lot of diesel fuel. We're very interested in alternative fuels. We're very interested in biodiesel. In fact, my company is testing higher diesel biodiesel blends. We're testing 10 and 20% blends in different locations on our system. The reason that we were given an exemption to begin with was that our manufacturers, particularly General Electric, said that they would not honor warranties if there were problems related to the use of biodiesel. As the letter that you have before you indicates, they say that while you get optimal performance with number 2 diesel, they will accept up to number 5 diesel. The problem is that in Minnesota, the mandate was scheduled to go up this year to 10%, and while the thresholds were not made for that increase to go into effect, our understanding is that the task force believes that they can administratively change that to 10% next year. So certainly we need the 10% would be in violation of the letter that GE sent out that you have before you. Also, in 2015, the blend mandate is set to go up to 20%. While GE, as of a couple years ago, now allows 5%, we'll accept that. It's hard to imagine that they're going to be up to 20% within a couple years. And so we share the desire that the extension be extended farther out than 2014 toward the exemption for the rail industry. As I said, we're interested in the fuel. We would love nothing more than to have alternatives to diesel fuel, but we do have this problem with manufacturers and warranties that we have to deal with. And these are $2 million pieces of equipment with warranties, contractual warranties that run, I'm told, 12 to 14 years. So this is a very big item for us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Senator Kielash?
Yeah. Mr. Sweeney, just curious, I don't know, are there any other states that have these kinds of mandates or coming up or exceptions? How do you work around them? Because BSF, NF is nationwide or through multi-states. Are you purchasing fuel in one state? You know, could you just give me a bit of a background how you deal with the multi-state regulations and how this is different from other states, or are there other states that are more restrictive than we are?
Mr. Sweeney?
Chairman Magnus, Senator, I'm not real familiar with any other state that has a mandate on a statewide mandate such as Minnesota that would apply to locomotive diesel fuel. We're in 28 different states. We purchase fuel in lots of different locations. I'm not aware that we have a state mandate that we're contending with any place other than the Minnesota issue, which we have an exemption to. But as I said, we have been testing it. We are interested in the fuel itself.
Thanks.
And Mr. Sweeney, we have an executive summary passed out of the study that the Society of Automotive Engineers and the Locomotive Maintenance Officers Association worked on, funded by the Soybean Board. And I would point out to members on page 2 of the study that that biodiesel has been tested for 15 years for use in railroad, and they've been using all sorts of the applications of rail, passenger, short haul, and freight, and everything else. And they've used varying biodiesel blends of B5, 10, 20, 25 over the past 15 years, and have had 3,700 locomotive months of biodiesel in here. So it's been studied extensively, but we do, I think, I would just say we do recognize some issues that you may have, the rail may have, Mr. Sweeney, but we're trying to get all the information together we can, and obviously it's been studied a long time, and But we're willing to work together with you when we can, where we can. So.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney.
Mr. Chair, hi, members, Amber Backus from the firm of Leonard Street and Dienard here on behalf of Canadian Pacific Railway. I don't want to be redundant with the remarks that have been shared so far, but we also do have some concerns about the bill before you. We do appreciate recognition of the exemption, but we would like to see it extended beyond 2 years. I'd just like to add that CP actually was the railroad where the testing was done for GE to do that letter in support of using blends of up to B5. But that test also recognized that they were just looking at the operational ability of the fuel on locomotive engines, not other factors such as storage and handling and long-term uses and impacts on greenhouse gases. And I'd like the committee to be aware that there are other factors that railroads look at when making their fuel purchasing decisions. It's not just how it works in the engines. That's a very important component, obviously, when railroad locomotives cost upwards of $2 million a year. But they're also looking at price and the supply chain, and I think there are some outstanding issues there that make us a little hesitant to move forward with using biodiesel at this time. So I'd just like that to be considered as well. There's a bigger picture to look at when making fuel purchasing decisions. So
Thank you, Ms. Backus. Any questions? Okay. I think we're going to hear about timber. My friend,
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Pratt, welcome to the committee. And I would point out you are a member of the Next Generation Energy Board, yes. As Senator Rosen and I are, and we welcome your testimony.
Good to be here, Mr. Chairman. Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Timber Producers Association. Our members are loggers, truckers, sawmills, allied businesses from throughout the state. We have members from Wyckoff to Williams, from Lowman to Lanesboro, and all of the places in between that have trees. It's good to be here in the Ag Committee. We like to think of ourselves here as representing Minnesota's tallest crop for agriculture. Our members, we appreciate the committee's work on this. Our members burn diesel, biodiesel in their trucks year-round. Many of them burn biodiesel in the logging equipment spring, summer, and fall. Our concern when we initially had asked for the exemption several years ago and when it was included were problems that we had had at that time in the winter months. Our theory, or I guess our belief, is that the small quantities out in the woods, remote sites, tend to get colder than larger quantities of fuel in either above ground or underground storage tanks, and that represents a unique situation. I know that there's been a lot of different studies that have been looked at. Mr. Schoenfeld laid some of those out, and the chairman has mentioned some of those. I'm not aware, and maybe we ought to start doing some testing kind of out in the conditions that we actually operate in, because I don't know that we've done that yet, and that's maybe something that's advisable. As for the numbers of years, we'd prefer longer. I asked for a pony for Christmas, and my kids asked for ponies for Christmas, too, as we were growing up. So we would prefer longer rather than shorter, or at least until we can demonstrate that the fuel works in the conditions in which we use it. So thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Thanks for coming before the committee. Thank you. Any questions? Any other people want to testify? Both of you come up, and we'll take turns here. Department of Commerce first, or go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Peter Brickwitty from the Department of Commerce. I just want to speak very briefly to the cold weather month rules addressed in Section 1 of the Delete All Amendment. The Department of Commerce has been having conversations with a number of stakeholder groups about laying out some markers or some goals during whatever length of time, if the legislature decides to extend either the commissioner's order or to do it statutorily, that within that time that we work together to set out some plans for how at the end of whatever length of period that is, we have the ability to say proactively whether or not we have a product that works during the entire year or if we don't yet have that product here in Minnesota. And so We're going to continue to work with stakeholders over the next week or so, and Mr. Chairman, grateful to you for bringing this forward and for laying it over so we can continue to have those discussions. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. And again, I would point out to the members the bottom of the delete all amendment and on to the second page. I fully intend that this would be part of the study, and the Department of Commerce is part of that. Along with the Department of Agriculture, and I fully anticipate that we get these studies done, and as a result of the studies, we'll figure out some time frames from there. But I'm only trying to be responsible, but yet being reasonable. But responsibility is a key part of the delete all amendment, and I'm not interested in going on to X number of years and with no studies done, with no work done, and come back at the end of that and here we go again, and maybe that day biodiesel's 10 cents a gallon higher price than regular diesel, and nobody wants to use it won't work in your engines and they're not warranted and all that nonsense, but maybe it's 20 cents a gallon cheaper and we won't have to do any of this stuff. We are going to have studies done. We are going to have some responsibility around here. So thank you. Any questions? All right, next.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senators, thank you. My name is Scott Hedrick. I'm with Renewable Energy Group. For those of you who might be familiar, we own and operate the plant in Albert Lea. It was originally built by a cooperative called Soymore. We purchased that plant last year. We've had it up and running since August 1st. I know time is short, so I'll be brief. You heard a number of points today. From a biodiesel industry producer standpoint, we understand that we've got some customers who have some concerns. Our goal at the end of the day is to provide a product that we hope everybody wants. And we think that we'll get to an end point where we'll be there. In the interim, certainly looking at extending these exemptions for a short period of time is reasonable. It's certainly reasonable to discuss. We can, I think, have an active debate over how far and how long that point of time needs to be. But certainly in the short term to extend it, I think, makes sense. I just wanted to share a couple things. It's not widely known, but within the deep underground mining industry, B100 is the typical fuel of use. That's 100% biodiesel. And the reason for that is for emissions. Companies usually don't stay in business too long if their employees are passing out or worse from emissions coming from their combustion engines. So B100, because of the environmental benefits, is the choice of use. If you look at the mining industry in Utah, about 85 to 90% of that industry is on a B100 blend. I'll also point out, I heard a couple engine manufacturers' names, CAT, Komatsu was one. I believe they warranty their engines to B20 today. The point being, I think as science progresses, as our industry's capabilities progress, we'll have a product that meets folks' needs. There's no question 5-6 years ago, before the STM standards were put in place, there was biodiesel that was bought and sold in the marketplace that shouldn't have been, didn't meet spec, didn't meet customers' needs, created lots of problems. Today, with the proactive work that our industry's done with the oil industry to come up with specs to create a product that can seamlessly blend into their product, I think we've taken care of that. If you ask me honestly where there are still a few bad actors out there, there's always bad actors somewhere. But I think you've got well over 95-98% of the supply in the marketplace today meeting that ASTM spec. And I will point out that if you sell fuel that's biodiesel, it's not ASTM spec, that's illegal. You can have not only EPA come after you, but all sorts of other folks. And I guess lastly, I'll just share that I can tell you, having worked with a number of Class 3 railroads in the state of Iowa, as well as a couple major Class 1 carriers, they're all looking at blends above B5, B10, B20. They're being run today. So if there's concerns about warranties, they're proactively perhaps maybe disregarding the concern about that. The reason they're being run today is that it's a cost-effective fuel. When you take into account all the aspects of the program, a B20 blend in some areas of the country can run you anywhere from 10 cents to 30 cents under the price of ULSD. So with that, I want to thank the committee, appreciate the work that we're doing, and hope at the end of the day we can all come to agreement on some legislation that meets everyone's needs.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? If not, anyone else prepared to testify? The Department of Ag.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Greta Gothier from the Department of Agriculture, and I'll keep it very brief. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We support this bill. We will take the study, the studies outlined in the Delete All very seriously. We believe that all biofuels are a very important part of Minnesota's agriculture economy. So we think it's entirely reasonable and doable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Gothier. Any questions? Anyone else wish to testify? The bill. Any comments from the legislature, from the senators?
Did you pick up
these Senator Saxhog.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an oral amendment.
All right. Please state your oral amendment.
Oral amendment would be on lines 1.19 and 2.3, changing 2014 to 2015. Just basically adding another year of the extension, hoping that the task force can get her done by that time.
Any discussion? Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I would speak against this change. I think that as this discussion occurs and goes off to conference committee, the chair has picked a good starting point for the discussion, and it's no sense weakening our position before we even get there. So I would oppose this change, and I would hope that we could stick with the chair on his selection of time periods.
Any other comments? All right. I guess we'll vote on Senator Saxhog's amendment to the amendment, changing the dates from 2014 to 2015. On line 119 and line 2.3. All those in favor of Senator Saxhog's amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not carry. With that,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Scoy.
Just to that point of the date. With all my good friends, the folks that came and testified today, bringing them back here in a couple of years is just full employment opportunities for those guys.
Well, Senator Scoy, you know, I've done my best to be reasonable with this, but yet responsible, and I think it allows us to. We recognize we have some potential out there we need to work on, so let's get the biodiesel task force working, have the agencies work together. We'll figure out these dates down the road, but I'm doing my best to move this forward. So for now, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion or lay it on the table, whatever we want to do, and we'll have a discussion next Tuesday on other agricultural issues that come before the committee. Thank you very much for your testimony, everyone, and for attending today. We're adjourned.